Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the blessed guy who's the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community, a Christian church in Sacramento, California, and the host of this program, where each week we love to bring you a wide variety of guests from far-flung places to talk about, well, ancient future faith and whatever else is on their mind. Today, certainly from a far-flung place, is one of my favoriteest folks in the whole wide world, Susan Spann, and we're talking through the miracle of technology to her from her home in Tokyo, Japan. Hi, Susan, and welcome.
Hello, Pastor Chris. Wonderful to talk with you.
You know what? I was thinking today, Susan, that one of the niftiest things about being a pastor is that God puts wonderful people in your pathway. And I just pinch myself every time I think about how blessed I am that we are buddies and that our paths crossed. I admire you, love your work. And I can't wait to talk to you about the latest nifty things that have happened in your life.
Well, thank you so much. And I just love you too. And all the people at Epiclesis, really. I mean, the church that you founded is just such a special place filled with amazing people. And the one thing that I truly miss about living in the United States is being able to attend Epiclesis, although I can still attend.
That's right.
The miracle of modern technology, all of your services and even your great morning devotional times are actually on Zoom. So, you know, people listening, you can actually check that out from wherever you are in the whole world.
Bless you. And I didn't even have to pay for the commercial. I'm so grateful. Folks, Susan was a, and still is, I think, a member of our church here in Sacramento, California. But my goodness, she's a lot of different things. But Susan is a mom. She's a lawyer. She's a wonderful award-winning author. She's a breast cancer survivor. She is a champion climber. I don't know where to start with all that, Susan. But just before you left to go to Japan, you got some pretty tough news, and that kind of works into the story that we're going to talk about today. So give us a thumbnail sketch of that, would you?
When I turned 45, I realized that I had lived my entire life in fear, which is a thing that theoretically, at least, a Christian shouldn't do. We should be walking boldly, but I made every decision on the basis of what might happen and all the bad things that might happen. And so I didn't do things. In fact, you know, I tell a story in the book Climb about being 6 years old and at a school carnival, and I was standing in line for the bouncy house, and there saw a sign that said, enter at your own risk. And I got out of line because I didn't know what the risk was. And I felt like I couldn't evaluate it properly if I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
And to this day, I have never been inside a bouncy house, because by the time I was old enough to realize that was a really ridiculous fear and that they were not just death traps for small children.
Right, right.
I was too big to go inside one. And so at 45, I realized this, and I had been traveling to Japan once a year to do research for my mystery novels. And so I decided that I would attempt to climb the 100 famous mountains of Japan, the Nihon Hyakumeizan, which were featured in a book by mountaineer Kiyo Fukada. And I was going to try and do it in a year, because as an American, of course, we have to do everything within a year. side note, in Japan, that's ridiculous. The whole point of climbing the Hyakumeizan is to come to a deep personal and spiritual understanding of what it is to be in the mountains in Japan. It is a transformative experience and a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
But I decided I was going to do it in a year. And so part of the reason for doing this was to face my fears. I had climbed one mountain in my life. Mm-hmm. Again, I talk about it in the book. It was an absolute disaster.
Oh.
So why I thought this was a good idea, you know, you could say the Lord leads us into really interesting places.
Yeah.
But so I decided to do this, and I went to go get a mammogram because I was going to be in Japan for a year. And when I went for that mammogram, the results were not normal. And right there that same day, they had me do an ultrasound, and the tech was doing the ultrasound, and she was on my chest for about 15 seconds, and then she moved into my armpit, and I started hyperventilating. And she said, are you okay? And I looked at her, and I said, we both know I'm not okay because you're looking at my lymph nodes.
Yeah.
And it was cancer, and it was malignant cancer. It was infiltrating ductal carcinoma, which people may or may not realize once it's infiltrating, it means that the cancer is actually broken out of the breast duct and is moving elsewhere. I was very fortunate it was not in my lymph nodes, but I did undergo a radical double mastectomy with some lymph node removal. And I do tell people, even though this is, you know, it's personal information, but I did opt not to have reconstruction. I think it's important to say that to people because a lot of people are afraid or embarrassed or don't know what decision they should make. And the thing that I tell people is if you're facing something like this, it's a decision for you or for you and God, depending on how you make decisions. And you need to make the decision that works for you. And so I look at myself now in the mirror, and the person that I see actually matches who's in my head a lot better. And I feel like it was the right decision for me. But when you look at yourself, we all have scars. Mine are just a little more visible.
Yeah. I have to tell you, folks, that Susan handled this in such a amazing way. It was breathtaking, really. And from somebody who says that they are fearful, to this day, I was just absolutely gobsmacked at the wonderful way that you handled that. And then the very quick turnaround of schedules and going to Japan and starting this 100 mountain thing that you did, I salute you. It was amazing.
Thank you very much. You know, it was one of those things that I have to give a lot of credit to the Lord for the management of this, because I had my mammogram on a Wednesday, a biopsy on Friday, met with the surgeon on Monday, had my mastectomy on the following Friday, and 20 days later I was in Japan, not to climb, but I went and did some preliminary things and then came back, had chemotherapy, and then, yeah, within 30 days of finishing chemotherapy, I was on my first mountain.
On your first mountain, climbing 100 mountains. What were you thinking? We're going to get to that in just a second. But folks, let me remind you that you're listening to Ancient Future Faith. It's a podcast and radio program brought to you by Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith Christian church in Sacramento, California. I usually say on the phone, but today on the Skype, all the way from Tokyo, Japan, is my friend and a wonderful human being that I can't wait for you to get a hold of her books because you're going to want to read them. Susan Spann, we're talking about this amazing, crazy thing that you decided to do to face fear, climbing 100 mountains in Japan in 1 year. So you get started not too long after the chemotherapy treatments. Mm-hmm. Was there a place along the way, there had to be, where you went, what in the world was I thinking?
I mean, that's pretty much the story of the entire year. and I mentioned that, you know, one of the things that was really important for me, I had signed a contract with my publisher to write the book that became Climb, which is the book that is just releasing, 1 week before my cancer diagnosis.
Mercy.
And it was supposed to be a book about facing fear and through climbing 100 mountains in Japan. And they were pitching it as sort of like Eat, Pray, Love meets Wild meets Bill Bryson in the mountains of Japan. And I got this diagnosis and I called my agent. I said, Sandra, I have good news and I have bad news. She said, okay, bad news first, always. I said, well, the bad news is I have cancer. And she said, there's good news? I said, yeah, Climb's going to be a really great book now.
Well, it did give it special focus, yes, and sharpened the need and narrowed the dramatic stuff at play, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, but I also tell Christian friends, be careful what you pray for. And my other people that I know, I say, you know, be careful what you ask for, because, you know, I wanted to face my fears. Yeah. And sometimes the answer is yes, in spades. But I found out that that was not the only thing I was afraid of. So you asked, was there ever a time when I went, what on earth was I thinking? Yeah, pretty much daily. Bearing in mind also, I had not been a very active person. I had made poor lifestyle choices, partly through fear again. So, you know, here I am, this person whose life was spent mostly in her brain, which was part of the reason for choosing mountains, which was when you're used to living in your own head, sometimes you think, well, what would it be like to do something real? What would it be like to climb a mountain? And from the first mountain on, you know, you walk up to the base of these things and you look up and you go, really? This was a good idea? Okay.
You know, my mind turns to the Christian saint and church father, John Climacus. Do you know that particular saint of God?
I do not, unfortunately.
6th, 7th century monk, Climacus. And he writes about the ladder of ascent. And he likens the Christian journey to Jacob's ladder, and that in climbing, we, through a variety of ascetic practices, among other things, we grow deeper in our Christian life. C-L-I-M-A-C-U-S, climacus. Mm. And he talks about growing deeper as you listen more and take your time in going up this ladder. That really resonates with what you said a minute ago. The Japanese say, okay, listen, this business about doing all this in a year, that is not what we're after here. And there are some similarities there, yes, in taking the time. And I guess that's what I want to get to at this point, taking the time and spiritual lessons that you learned as you're preparing for this book called Climb.
Absolutely. In fact, I hit a point, and I don't want to give away too many spoilers for the things that go on in the book, because it really was a transformative journey, and I enjoyed writing and sharing it. I think the feedback I'm getting is that it is having an impact on the people who read it, but I realized after I was less than a quarter of the way into these mountains that I had made a decision that curiously was going to prevent me from doing the very thing that I had decided to do, which is climbing the Hyakumeizan in a year. I very quickly realized was incompatible with truly facing my fears and making the ascent from fear into confidence that I wanted to make.
Hey, you know, we need to stop right there and say that again. Folks, listen, there's a spiritual lesson in that. This goal that you're setting for yourself may be in conflict for the spiritual formational thing that God wants to do in your life. Just walk us through that one more time, would you? That's good stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, as I started climbing, and for people who are curious about it, a lot of people have said, we wish we could get more images. And I'm actually posting on my website a chapter by chapter photo companion to the book. So you can see all of the things that I talk about and a lot of extra features in there too. But I was experiencing some of the most amazing, beautiful scenery. I mean, it is unbelievable what God has done in creation. I mean, it's just spectacular. And I was seeing things that I had seen in photographs in National Geographic, but I was living them. I was walking through them. It was amazing. And also, I climbed almost all of these mountains alone. And one thing I discovered is that, first of all, you know, a Christian would tell you, you're never alone. God's always with you. But you're also always with yourself. And it is not possible to climb this many mountains and spend this many hours traveling and climbing by yourself without facing some very deep fears. And I did not allow myself to listen to music. I had no headphones on. I listened only to what was in my head and around me in nature. So I started having these very transformative experiences, a lot of emotional things digging up in my life and working through things and, you know, literally one step at a time on the trail. A lot of prayer time, meditation, and I came to realize that I could climb the Hyakumeizan, these particular 100 mountains, in a year, or I could emerge from fear into confidence and truly transform myself and my life, but I could not do both. And I actually got to the point where I had to make the decision, and I chose to climb a mountain that was not one of the Hyakumeizan, a different mountain, to see what the Lord would bring me and to see what I would find in myself when I made that climb. And it also happened to be on one of the hottest days of the year. That was really insane. But it was a very transformative experience for me. And I did, in fact, make the decision about what I was going to do. And I guess I can give that spoiler, which is I did, in fact, climb 100 mountains in a year. But my quest to climb the Hyakumeizan continues.
Let me ask you a question that might not have occurred to you. Did you like you before you began this journey? And how has your relationship with you changed through this?
I would have told you that I liked me. I would have been lying. Curiously, I had been plagued by nightmares my entire life, really, but truly my entire adult life. I had not gone more than a week without a night, we're talking wake up in a sweat type nightmares.
Oh, mercy.
In decades. I had an experience in the mountains in Japan. I will not tell you what that experience was. I write about it in detail in the book. But I can tell you that I have not had a nightmare
in
a year, over a year. I have not had a nightmare since the night that I had that experience. And what I came to realize in Japan, in the mountains, was I think the reason that I didn't truly love myself was that I didn't know myself.
And as you said, you can't do what you did and not get to know yourself, because no matter where you go, there you are, right?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I discovered, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people as well, is that the largest obstacle to your own personal inner peace and happiness is actually you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Before we go any farther, I want folks to know the full title of the book and where to get it. Because folks, let me tell you something, you got to get a hold of this. And also, Susan, you mentioned the website a minute ago. I want to make sure we get people going there as well because of this wonderful photo companion that you're talking about. But the book is called Climb, and there's a wonderful subtitle. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's called Climb, Leaving Safe and Finding Strength on 100 Mountains in Japan.
Love it. And where can we get it?
You can get it anywhere books are sold. I'd like to make a big plug for local bookstores. A lot of local bookstores during what's going on right now, which, you know, we're talking in the middle of the 2020 coronavirus pandemic, of course. And so a lot of local bookstores are doing internet orders or telephone orders, and then they're doing either curbside pickup or they're delivering. So if you have a local bookstore that you used to like before this pandemic, you know, contact them, check in, see if they are still in operation. I can tell you there's a wonderful bookstore called Face in a Book that's in El Dorado Hills, which is out near where, relatively near where you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are a wonderful bookstore, and so they can order it for you. You can also get it online through IndieBound, through Barnes & Noble, through Amazon. Barnes & Noble does carry it. They can order it if they don't have it in stock. I can tell you that the publisher was surprised. This book is selling a lot faster than they anticipated. So you may have to order it because I'm finding that a lot of places are actually selling out of it pretty quickly, which is great and
sure.
Not great, right? Because
well,
you can't just walk in. But
right.
And then it's also available in ebook format. There are color photographs in the book. There are also color photographs, as I mentioned, on my website, which is susanspann.com, and my last name is S-P-A-N-N.
We didn't get to talk in this broadcast about your other hats that you wear, say, for example, being a great mom and being a great lawyer and all the other wonderful things that you do. For example, you're learning Japanese, of course, but also Japanese calligraphy, which just knocks me out. But we do have to take a moment just in our remaining minutes to talk about this other series of books that you have. Folks, listen, you're going to want to get Climb because it's real stuff and it's transformational, as she says. But you also want to get a hold of her 7, soon to be 8, wonderful fiction mysteries called the Shinobi Mysteries. And it's just near and dear to my heart because there's a priest involved, right? Tell us just a little bit about the series, would you, Susan?
I would be glad to. Thank you. Yes, the Shinobi Mysteries, also known as the Hiro Hattori novels, are the ongoing adventures of Master Ninja Hiro Hattori and his sidekick, Portuguese Jesuit Father Mateo, who solve mysteries in 16th century Japan. And so they start in Kyoto and they move all around. And yes, it's basically, I tell people, it's kind of like Holmes and Watson do Samurai Japan.
Who in the world would have thought about a mystery solver ninja with a priest sidekick? Where in the world did you get that idea? And by the way, it works so well. But where did you get the idea?
The man upstairs kind of gets credit for that one, too. I was literally putting on eyeliner. I mean, I'm putting on eyeliner, which I guess is where everybody gets their great ideas. So I guess that's, you know, why women are so creative. And guys, maybe you should start wearing eyeliner.
Yeah.
I don't know. But putting on eyeliner, and this voice in my head says, most ninjas commit murders, but Hiro Hattori solves them. I went, what? Like, is that a book? And I went and actually looked on the internet to find out if that was something I had heard of or
right.
seen somewhere. And it didn't exist. And I thought, wow, this is a book that I have to write. And I do have an undergraduate degree in Asian studies. I've loved Japanese history and culture all my life. And so this was in my comfort zone.
Sure.
And the height of real ninja, ninja were real. People who, you know, they weren't the men in pajamas running around that you see in the movies.
Right.
They were actually espionage agents. And they were very talented. A lot of them worked undercover. And the height of real ninja activity was actually in the 16th century, which also happened to coincide with about a slightly less than 100-year period when the Jesuits had come to Japan and had permission to be there to do evangelical activities and preaching. And he made a great foil for Hiro. He does two things that I think are really wonderful. And the first one is that he allows me a lens through which I can explain certain aspects of Japanese culture, because of course he's a foreigner, he doesn't know it. So he can ask this sort of the silly questions that the reader might ask, right? Why do they do that? But also it allows me to create a pair of characters who view the world in incredibly different ways.
Yeah.
Kido is either an agnostic or an atheist, depending on the time of day. And Father Mateo, of course, is a man of very strong faith. I did a lot of reading on the Jesuits, and their faith was a lot closer in that time, at least some of them, to what we would call ancient future today true Catholicism as we know it today.
Right.
And so I have really allowed him to be a follower of Christ rather than someone who adheres to edicts and rules.
Some cleric.
Right. But he is still very, very firm and stern in his faith. And he and Hiro, they don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. And it's wonderful because for me as a human being, you know, we all, no matter how good we are in terms of being Christians or being in our faith, you know, we do have that other voice in our head that kind of goes, really? Sometimes, you know, kind of go, really?
Sure,
and then
sure.
You have to go back to your faith with it. And so this internal dialogue really has become an external dialogue. And of course, you know, I'm not an agnostic or an atheist, but I went through a period in my life when I was. And so I know those arguments as well.
Sure.
And so part of what I'm doing with the book is, of course, they're not message books. They're great, fun mysteries that move very fast and have lots of interesting characters and show you Japan. But on a deeper level, they're my opportunity to show that it is possible for people who come from very, very different worldviews and very, very different places and perspectives to be friends and even develop love for one another in the sense of brotherhood.
And that shines through, I have to say. Susan, we are at the time where we must say goodbye, but I'm struck again with this message about facing fear and learning to listen and maybe contemplate. And I'm wondering if you have something to say. Somebody out there who's fearful, my goodness, we're living in such a weird upside down age. And somebody's listening right now, and you have a little nugget, a wisdom nugget for us about facing fear. What would it be? What's an encouraging word you can leave us with?
You know, actually, sort of is a combination message. And the first one is that fear is a liar.
Amen.
Fear will tell you that you can do, you cannot. And the only thing that fear knows how to tell you is that you cannot.
Yeah.
But that's a lie.
It is.
And it is a insidious lie because it's very easy to believe. And it's also very easy to prove true, because all you have to do to fail is not try. You know, there's that old saying, you miss all of the shots you don't take.
Right.
And it's hard to line up on the line and take the shot, because you might miss it, but you might not.
Mm.
And if you miss it, you can try again, and you can try again, and you can try again. And that leads into the second part of this, which is actually the tagline that I use for the book Climb, because I believe it so deeply, and that is, dare to dream, and you can change your world.
Yeah. And in some ways starts with you, doesn't it, in this transformational process that you went through from fear to, well, 100 mountain peaks. Folks, my guest today on Ancient Future Faith has been my friend, Susan Spann. She's a wonderful author. You're going to want to pick up the book Climb. And also, just for fun, you've got to grab those Shinobi mysteries as well. Susan, we've run out of time, doggone it, but there's still 100 things I'd love to pick your brains about. So will you agree to come back on again? Let's do this.
I would love to. Thank you so much. I always love talking with you.
Bless you. You're a dear heart. Folks, you've been listening to another episode of Ancient Future Faith. My guest today, Susan Spann. What a delight. Until we gather for another episode, I want you to be thinking about this, would you? Surely, the road to our evangelical future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church. And they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi there, friends. This is Pastor Chris. One more word, please, before you go. Wanted to let you know that during this difficult time of the COVID-19 virus, we are not gathering at Epiclesis in body, but we are virtually in body because we share the same head, Jesus Christ. So if you're interested in hearing more about our virtual worship services or special small groups or prayer services, please check out epiclesis.org. That's E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. Stay safe, and the Lord be with you.